Let's hear that intro.
Howdy, howdy, folks. Welcome back to Hoot and a Half. I'm Matt King.
And I'm Mike Sheffer.
And this is episode 5. Yes, episode 5. And we're sorry we didn't have an episode last week due to some scheduling conflicts and some events that went down with Jeff Wittick and David on a trip we had. I don't want to give any spoilers. That's their story to tell, and you will hear all about it in the future. But we managed to get an episode done for this week, and it's with our good friend, Casey Neistat. You may know him as a YouTube personality, filmmaker, vlogger. He's an incredible human being, so profound, and I'm so happy that we had this really great conversation. I hope you guys enjoy it. Mike, do you have anything to add?
This was just, I think, one of our best episodes yet. It really felt like we're coming into our own in this little podcasting game we're doing. And just big, big thanks to Casey for letting us come to his house, actually, which is where we recorded this, our little mobile podcast setup. So we had even within our special guest of Casey, we had another surprise guest show up, which you'll hear. probably the cutest guest we've had on the show so far. But yeah, enjoy the episode.
Enjoy, guys.
I would just like to hang out with you guys. So I was like, yeah, I'd totally love to do it.
Have you been on
David's? I just
want
to hang out with you.
Have you been on David's podcast?
Only when I was at his house and they're like, we're recording the podcast. Casey, don't move. Hold this microphone. Talk into it. that's how it came to be.
We're rolling right now.
Great.
All right.
Go.
Casey Neistat in the house. We're in Casey Neistat's house. Thank you for having us, Casey.
I really appreciate you guys keeping me from having to drive to your place.
That's the thing about people who live on the West Side in LA. Once you live on the West Side, you never visit really your friends.
Yeah, when you're close to the beach, I guess you don't want to go, especially over the hill into like the valley. That's,
you know what it is? It's like, I talk like an expert, but I've been in LA less than you have, I think.
Yeah.
For less time than you have. Like, but yeah, when you're here, you feel like you're in a special little town and there's a beach at the end of the road. Everything's flat. You ride your bike. And the idea of getting in a car and then driving 25 minutes to see someone or do something is just the most disparaging. I'm from New York where it's a skateboard ride, but yeah, no, I never leave.
Have you been getting the most out of like your Venice experience compared to New York? Are you still like boosting around on your board? Or
that's the thing, is like, so there's a permanent, since we moved in, like a permanent tension, one of those words between Candace and I, because she fucking hates Venice. She hates it, and she's not wrong to hate it. But I love it here. So when it comes to like taking advantage, like, yes, I go to the beach every day, 7 days a week on my bike. So you ride your bike with a surfboard to the beach, which is like the Venice dream. And like, I go to the restaurants, all my friends live here. It's like, I'm like a 12-year-old kid from like a 1980s movie where I like ride my bike around and just like show up at my friend's house and be like high five and then go to the beach and surf and skateboard and stuff. I love it. But
what does she hate about it?
Well, I don't think either of us really respected just how dangerous it is here. Like, when you come from, first of all, if to the listeners at home, if you hear airplanes throughout this podcast, it's because we're at my house in Venice and we live directly under an airport. That's on the list of things that Candace doesn't love.
So this is constant noise over
the house. It never stops. But I don't mind that. But the crime thing is like, so we're from New York City, which means like fucking what, crime? Come on. Like, I know crime from New York. And like, we thought we were tough, and then you move to Venice and you're like get me out of here. This is too scary. I can't handle this.
Venice is tougher than Manhattan.
Yeah, then like, and I'm sure your audience might call me out for being a wimp, but like, I've never experienced crime and criminality like what I see here on a daily basis.
Do you think that's due to like the current pandemic and economic situation, or was it like that before?
No, so it was always like rough around the edges. This is my understanding of Venice. Always rough around the edges. 90s, 80s was like peak gang, like crack. All that happened here, like major gang violence. Mm-hmm. But it's really been cleaned up in the last 20 years. And Snapchat like accelerated that to a crazy degree because they were headquartered here. So real estate values went up. Like, it was super gentrified. And it got really clean. And then we moved in. And like, it wasn't bad when we first moved in. Like, we knew what we were getting ourselves into. But then when Corona happened, like, not to sound political, but like, you know, they don't want to put people in jail because they don't want to put someone in a confined area if they have Corona.
Yeah.
So the way the geniuses in charge are dealing with that are just not arresting people. So it's like, for the most part, it doesn't matter what your crime is. They're not going to arrest you. And if they do arrest you, they bring you down, and then there's no bail because of Corona. So they just let you go. So like I saw like a family get beat up on Main Street in Santa Monica, and like that guy was back on the streets like the next day, according to like the crime blog that I follow. Like there's a homeless shelter down the street. When I say down the street, I mean like we could probably throw a baseball and hit it from here. And like a homeless guy was clearly under the influence of something very scary and was beating the shit out of one of the security guards there, like trying to kill him. And the police showed up, and I saw a video. The police showed up and like gagged the guy. They did the right thing. Cops like busting their ass here to keep people safe, like handcuff the guy. And as they're trying to stuff the guy in a cop car, he's screaming through his gag, "I'll be out tonight. I'm coming back. I'll be out tonight." And the scary thing is he probably was out that night.
Oh, my.
You're living in a different Los Angeles than we are, man. Oh, my God.
Have you heard about like the LAPD like police scanner on like Twitter?
Yeah, so I follow all those. Like,
yeah,
that's
don't tell Candace about that.
Like, yeah, if anybody at home wants to fact check me, please know that my only source of this information is, what's that app? Citizen app.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And Twitter police scanner. So I could be wrong about some of the details here, but I'm definitely not wrong about the gunfire, because we see and hear that all the time, like constantly. Like Candace and I have a game every night. Is it fireworks or is it gunfire?
Oh, my God.
Usually, like,
fireworks. Everyone keeps lighting off fireworks lately.
That has been a thing that's been happening, especially in New York and, like,
in Los Angeles.
There's a lot of theories. I don't know if you guys have heard the theories.
I've seen the tin hat theories.
Yeah. What is the theory?
Okay. This is some, like, Alex Jones conspiratorial shit here.
Yeah. But
basically, like, I don't know what the conspiracy is in LA or if it's the same, but I know what it is in New York, which is that, like, fireworks are illegal there. They're strictly enforced. I knew that when I lived there. Like, you set off a firecracker, you're in trouble. And they're really hard to actually get there, because you can't buy them there. You can't buy them nearby, so you got to, like, travel out of state. Yet everyone is launching, like, the gnarliest. You know what a mortar firework is? It's the one that you drop in the tube, and it goes...
Yeah.
People, like, launching mortars relentlessly in the city. So the theory, I'm not subscribing to this or promoting this theory, but the theory is that, like... maybe all of this like anti-police sentiment, which is super, super fresh, it's still happening. The protests are still happening against the police in New York City. Maybe the police have something to do with who's setting off the fireworks. That's why this is like a tinfoil hat theory. Uh-huh. Because like the theory, which there's no evidence of, asterisk, like this is not fact. This is just people suggesting that like maybe somehow like the people who are in charge of law enforcement are actually like promoting this just to demonstrate just how much the city needs them. That's the theory, right, Mike? Like,
that's,
did I say
part
it right?
One of the theory.
Oh,
yes.
There's more?
Yeah. So, go. And this is even deeper down the rabbit hole, but in describing not knowing the difference between fireworks and gunfire, there's a theory that the police are allowing the sound of warfare to permeate our cities so that the people who live in these cities get used to hearing the sounds of gunfire / fireworks on a nightly basis, become desensitized to it. And when the police force uses actual force at night, we won't be as sensitized to it and we'll be more likely to let it slide. I mean, this is way...
Come on, Mike, who told you that?
It was one of those Twitter threads that, like, you know, a bunch of...
Me too. I got to the end of mine and I was like, Twitter, where's my fact check here?
Yeah, I mean,
tell me whether or not to believe this bullshit.
You can't know. Like,
I think there is just some really good deal going
on
with fireworks.
Yeah,
and I haven't heard about it.
The other theory, the more banal theory, is that a lot of the firework salespeople are anticipating a low 4th of July purchase
season.
So they're selling them at a discount to anybody and everybody who will buy them.
So for our listeners at home, sorry to interrupt the podcast, we're sitting here chit-chatting and my 5-year-old just showed up the door. We're about to have a special guest. Please hold.
We're recording a podcast. You want to come
host? Hi, hello. You want to say hi?
Okay. Yeah, Franny does podcasts all the time.
Hi, Franny. Thank you for joining us.
Francine, what do you think of life in Venice Beach, California?
I don't know.
Do you like living here?
No.
Where would you like to live if not Venice Beach?
I would like to live in New York again.
You want to go back to New York? What did you like about New York? You know, Mike's from New York.
I like that we had a park closer. Than Oakwood.
That's true. We were closer to the park than we are close to the Oakwood Park here.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something important?
I got like a party up here.
A party? Well, it's kind of a party.
Yeah, it's a party.
No, we're just making a podcast.
Oh.
Can you leave us alone now?
Nope. I want to stay.
You want to stay? All right, you can hang out. We're just going to talk like adults, okay? You don't mind, do you? All right, Mike, I'm not going to be able to swear as much.
That's okay.
It rubs off. Yeah, so I'm not buying those.
The theories?
I mean...
It's a crazy theory.
It's a crazy theory.
Like, that's like your deep state, like crazy.
But I will say, so where we lived in New York City was, what was the name of our neighborhood? Come on.
New York City Battery Park.
That's right. So we lived in a neighborhood in New York City called Battery Park, which is like super safe, families and stuff like that. So we were particularly like taken aback by what we see here. I'm going to use bigger words here, so maybe she won't pick up on it, but there was a double homicide at our Whole Foods. you guys are laughing at double.
Today in Battery Park.
We are not in Battery Park, Brandon.
Are you doing the news, Francine?
Yes.
Let's hear the news. What's the news for today?
Today on Baby Pictures, we would like to present a wonderful child called Georgina Neistat.
Franny, I want you to know I'm texting Mom right now to come get you.
Mommy is literally downstairs.
Brittany, how...
This Julia Neistat is shady downstairs, Poopy.
Why don't you go see what she's doing?
Poopy.
Casey, I think you can head down. We got our guest for the week. We're gonna continue the interview with Francine.
And also, I don't know if you've ever heard a five-year-old's voice in headphones in your ear, but it's like the nicest thing to listen to. You have a beautiful voice, young lady.
Okay, fine.
Uh-oh. You are busted. You are busted. You are busted.
We'd like to thank our very special guest, Francine Neistat. That was so nice.
Such a great cameo.
I wonder if the cameras are picking up her screaming bloody murder as she's carried away from the podcast.
Do you see a lot of yourself in your daughter?
Yeah, so there's two. There's the baby and Franny. So the baby looks more like me, but she's pretty. But she has my big round face and brown hair. And there's Francine, who looks exactly like Candace. So, yeah, like the baby kind of acts like me, and then that one's just like Candace. Like, that's what dealing with five-year-old Candace would be like, which is cool, except for if you, like, project that, like, if you just follow the trajectory, it means we have to deal with a 13-year-old Candace eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what a 25-year-old Candace is, because I knew her, and it's fucking terrifying.
Right.
Yeah, it's terrifying. We're doing everything we can right now to... be good parents.
Has this round of parenting been easier than the first time with your son Owen?
I don't, you know, that's a big question. And I think that, I mean, I explored a lot, but it's like the biggest difference is like I was dirt poor.
Mm-hmm.
Like we were on welfare when I had Owen. And now I like, you know, now I got that YouTube money. So it's like to raise with and to raise without.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had a choice, I would pick and always pick to raise with security, health insurance. Like she gets to go to whatever school we think she'd do best in. Like we have all of these wild luxuries because we have money. But like that aside, just from a purely intellectual perspective, there was something about raising a kid without that felt easier because, and just to qualify that word before anybody jumps on me, we didn't have options when it was Owen and me because we were so poor.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just like, we're in this together, kid. Here we go. And now with our kid, like Franny's going to a private school next year. And like Candace and I wrestled, like, should we or should we not send her to a private school? Like, because we can afford it. Shouldn't we give her the best education possible? Like as a parent, that's a natural line to follow. But then at the same time, it's like, I think the only reason why I was able to succeed in life is because I had such a struggle. Like it put hair on my chest as a kid to have to fight my way through public school and fight my way through like the things that I wanted. And now we can just give them to our kids.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it's definitely like more fun now doing it again. Cause like we get to take the kids to Disney World if they want to go. And like, you know, like we have a babysitter if Candace and I want to work or do a podcast at 2 p.m. on a Monday or whatever the fuck day today is. But I felt like I had less concerns with Owen. Like, how many really rich kids, not that we're really rich, but I mean, like, how many kids do you know that were raised in privilege, like truly privileged kids, silver spoon shit, that grew up to be like healthy, smart, well-rounded adults?
Good point. Right.
You know what I mean?
Not a lot. No.
There's something poetic. It's like, all you want to do is succeed in life so you can protect your kids from the shit you had to deal with when you were a kid. But it's the shit you dealt with when you were a kid that made you who you are. So by protecting your kids from that, aren't you doing them a disservice? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
It's the caterpillar butterfly analogy where, like, if you cut it, you know, if the caterpillar's in the cocoon and it's struggling to get out, you would think, oh, I'll just cut it and then it will be able to get out faster. But the struggle of the caterpillar is what gives it the strength to turn into a butterfly that's able to fly. And if you cut it too soon, the butterfly won't be able to fly because it didn't grow enough in the cocoon.
I've never heard that metaphor before, but I'm going to start using that, and I'll probably even say it in a video, and I'm not going to credit you.
That's okay.
I'm going to pretend that I just, like, came up with that. Like, next time I'm in a situation where I have to use that metaphor, I'm going to pause first and, like, look up as if I'm thinking of what's a good metaphor, and then I just came up with the butterfly. And
I already feel like you're full of metaphors, though. You are, like, the most well-spoken, wise person ever, and it's so refreshing when you do come around to, like, hang out with David and the crew, because it's like, oh, finally somebody, adults, a voice of reason,
someone
is
who's
speaking.
Read a book.
It's not having, like, Jonah hogging up the room talking all the time. It's so refreshing when Casey comes around.
Yeah, that's a fun time. That's a fun time. Plus, a butterfly is beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad you like that analogy.
I really am so impressed with that. Yeah. So impressed with that. But no, we're happy here. I think the biggest shift with, like, the California shift was for me to get away from, like, the workaholicness of the entirety of New York City.
Right.
Like, I made that movie about it right when we left there, but, like, I mean, Mike, you lived there forever. You know, like, Sam, your brother, my close friend, like, that's who he is, but, like, if you're in that city, you're busting your ass all day, every day. And if you're not, you don't have an identity. Like, mm-hmm. And then you just disappear. And then you move out of the city and go back to Cleveland.
Yeah.
But, like, that's it. Like,
yeah.
As long as you live there, there's two kinds of people. Those who are busting their ass and then somebody who's moving back to Cleveland in 2 weeks that didn't work out.
It's like 1 degree above survival.
That's right.
Is success.
That's right.
Like, that's what it is to be in New York. And then for someone like you to have hit the level of success that you hit in New York, which is such a tough place to even survive, is like, do you find yourself, like, antsy now, or have you put in your work and now you feel like, oh, I can finally relax? And, like, it sounds like it, you're going surfing, but.
Well, okay. So I had this great therapist. Candace put me in therapy when we moved out here, which was wonderful, but my therapist won't meet in person because of COVID-19, which I respect and is appropriate, but, like, I can't talk on a phone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no fucking way. Like, yeah. I'll talk on the phone and then it's like, Twitter is so much more interesting than whatever conversation you're having. The only reason why I'm able to focus on this conversation is you guys are directly in front of me. Like, if you were in the other room, I'd have my computer open and I'd just be answering every question with yeah.
Yeah.
But I asked my therapist, like, my main reason for being there was, it was like, all I want to do is fuck off. Like, I don't open my email inbox anymore. I don't, like, try to schedule a conference call and I just, like, I'll change my number. Like, I don't want to do anything right now. I don't want to commit to anyone right now. Like, I felt bad because I told you guys I'd do this podcast a week ago and you're, like, texting me this morning being like, are we still on for today? And the reason why I didn't text you back is because I was like, I'm not sure what time I'm going to be at the beach till. So I'll just text him when I leave the beach. Like, that's the insanity of the degree of indulgence. So, like, indulging in life. So, like, I said to my therapist, I was like, you know, like, when I even think of scheduling an appointment, I get this anxiety. Like, when I think about taking on a job or even making a fun YouTube, I get this anxiety, like, work? Like, no, I'm just trying to have a good time. Like, what do I do? So I said to her, I was like, how do I cope with that? Like, how do I get some part of that back where I can really be focused on work? And her response was like, why would you want to do that? Let's just talk about making you feel okay about doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yes, I fucking love you. But she's right. Like, the whole point of moving out here was to get away from all of that. And the fact that it happens to coincide with me arriving at a place in life where, for the first time ever, I've got financial stability. For the first time ever, I have, like, two babies that need a lot of attention and a wife. And for the first time ever, I'm in like a house, not in New York City. Like for the first time ever, I'm like on a silver platter here, like enjoy your life for a minute. And instead, all I'm doing is like paying a therapist a lot of money per hour to talk me back into working harder. Mm-hmm. Like she's completely right. Like I should feel comfortable like taking a year or two to really focus on family and focus on myself. But it's fucking hard. And like most of the time I just feel like a shell of a man, mm-hmm. you know?
So you feel a guilt about your lack of commitment. Right?
Tremendous. No, I feel like the person who got me to where I am right now is completely dead, or more appropriate, like it's completely dormant. And it's like, I feel like I have an obligation to that, not to sound like a schizophrenic, but like to that part of who I am, like an obligation to just run at things and make a million and just do me and start another company. But I'm not interested in any of that.
And that's okay.
Thank you, therapist.
Yeah.
I need someone to tell me that's okay. But I wrestle, like Mike's question was like, am I okay? And I'm wrestling with that.
Oh, no. Yeah. Like, it took me like 2 years of therapy to get to that point, just to be like, it's okay.
To fucking chill.
Yeah.
You've literally earned it in every possible way. Like you have a legacy already that any human being would and should be proud of, to take whatever time you need, whether it's a year or a decade. I mean, you've gotten this far trusting your instincts and trusting yourself. So like just, I mean, my humble perspective is continue steering into the discomfort and you'll be guided in the right direction.
You're right. You're right. But it still makes like the day to day hard.
Does surfing help you? Like, it sounds like that sort of.
But yeah, like if Candace was up here right now, she would say like, I'm doing with surfing what I do with work. Like I don't surf for fun. I mean, it's the most fun thing in the whole world. But like for me, it's a full-time job right now because I don't know how to do it and I will not stop until I'm very good at it.
Are you surfing by yourself or do you have like surfing buddies?
I'll go by myself. I'll go with my buddies. I'll go in the rain. Like when it was quarantine time and the beaches were closed, we would go at 4:30 in the morning when it was pitch black out. You paddle out there like before the sun comes up. The sun starts to crest,
mm-hmm.
just enough light. You surf. This is in February. You surf in the cold, in the storm, big waves when you're like gnarly. And then like during quarantine proper, like I think they shut down the beaches in mid-March. We would go so early because the lifeguards show up at 7 a.m. And we didn't want lifeguards to have to tell us to leave the beach. So we'd be out of the water before they got there at like 7 or 7:30 every morning.
So like, you treat surfing like you almost treat it like vlogging. Like you have to do it
every single day.
Obsessive.
I've got
to
get better at it. Like all I do is study it. I watch surf videos online trying to understand it.
Are you getting good ideas like out there while you're surfing?
No.
Like the same way you think a lot.
So fucking present.
Right. But you think a lot when you're running or sometimes
it's totally
like
different.
It's a whole different mind space to be in during those two different activities, I guess.
Like Matt, we've talked a lot about running and like the magic of running is it's a mindless sport.
Right.
Unless you're like doing sprint racing or something, but it's a mindless activity. That's why I'd run for like, you know, 20 hours a week is because it's just that mindlessness is really inspirational. You come up with good ideas. Mm-hmm. You figure out how to stop fighting with your girlfriend. You figure out like how to articulate. So like you find yourself when you run. Surfing is 100% like you have to be present.
Uh-huh. And patient.
And patient. You have to be staring at the surf, the lineup, the other surfers who's near me, who's going to try to take this wave from me. Do I have priority right now? Is this a wave or is this just like a little bit of a swell coming in?
Yeah.
Do I go left? Do I go right? Is it one more paddle, one less paddle? Like, am I too far down on the board? Am I too far up on the board? Like, are my feet together? Are my knees
touching? I look cool while I'm doing it?
Right.
I like surfing, but my problem is when I go out surfing, I just can't sit on my board and look cool.
Right.
Like I can surf,
like
but I can't get my balance of straddling the board and just.
You probably have like the front sticking up.
Yeah. And oh, yeah. That's when I look like the biggest fool is when I'm out there surfing. Hope you're enjoying this episode. We're just going to take a quick break to give a word from our sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And now back to the episode.
I think that a lot of people, and maybe yourself, considered as like, there's the vlogging Casey Neistat, there's the post-vlogging Casey Neistat, and then there's like current Casey Neistat. Do you think of yourself in like eras like that? Or
yeah, for sure. I recently, last week, I friend of mine passed away in New York. It was really sad. And I was talking to Candace about it and like trying to figure out whether or not I should go to like this wake that I ended up going to. And she was like, well, I've never even heard you mention him. And I had to explain to her like what role this friend of mine played in my life. And it was like, he was in my life from 2007 to the 2012 era, mm-hmm. which was like the last era ever before social media, before real camera phones, like where you could really go out and socialize and party without any real accountability for it, which only just ended. But that era was like a compartmentalized like part of my life that is so specific. And that part of me is completely gone. And then I think about like the version of me before that, which was like when I just moved to New York and like didn't have two nickels to rub together and couldn't figure out what to do in that city. And it was like the real survival aspect of like that was just surviving. And then I think like before that, like living in Connecticut, which was like from age 15 to like age 19, which was like running away from home, like living with like strangers and like just hustling, trying to like being a dishwasher, selling weed for a living. Like, so yeah, like life is very much so in chapters. And I think for whatever reason, maybe it's something that I self-perpetuate, but like my life, if those chapters are really, really like compartmentalized. They're really boxed off. And this new version of Casey is one that I'm particularly uneasy with. I'm just like a family guy that like hangs out with his kids all day and goes to the beach.
But weren't you uneasy in all of those times?
No.
Oh, you were pretty like steady in those past
years. Oh, yeah. Like manic, 100-hour a week working, no sleeping, running 20 miles a day, Casey. That is my comfort zone.
And also Casey dropping out of school comfort zone.
Yeah, I wasn't self-aware then. So I don't know. But I know that like the time in life where I felt like I was most settled into who I am was when I was daily vlogging. Because there was a singular purpose.
Yeah.
Which was to make that fucking video every day. And that comes at an expense. Like the cost of that was like a terrible father, terrible husband. Like, Candace and I were on the verge of divorce when I was daily vlogging, always.
I was watching it from the outside, and I was thinking to myself, I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, and, no, it's because it. The only thing that mattered was the vlog. It's the only thing that mattered. So, like, Matt and Mike, like, Casey, you want to hang out? And it's like, and in my head, I'm thinking, like, can I suck any content out of these two fuckers? And if the answer is no, I'd be like, oh, I can't, guys. I can't. I got to pick up the baby from something, something, something today.
Yeah.
And as friends, he'd be like, okay, cool. We'll call us when you're free up. And I'd be like, I will. Yeah, I'm probably not going to hang out with them until I'm done vlogging.
Yeah.
And then there were other friends, like your brother.
Yeah.
Sam, who I like love. I love Sam. But Sam's always good on camera. So I would always know. I could be like, Sam, what are you doing right now? I'd be like, well, kind of in the busy. I was just setting up my new Apple speaker. And I'd be like, cool, I'm coming over. And I'd just like bust in on him, and I know he'd be great in the vlog. Or like Candace brought up the other day where she's like, 2 out of 5 days a week around 3:30, 4 o'clock, I'd call her. And I'd be like, I don't have a third act. I need you. And I'd just show up at her office, or I'd make her meet me somewhere. Uh-huh. So the third act for the vlog would have her in it, which would lighten the whole thing up, like new environment. My only focus. And that's a really destructive thing when like you have employees that you should be looking after. You have family you should be looking after. You have a wife you should be looking at. Like all of that played a very distant second fiddle to getting that video out every single day.
Do you think if YouTube was around when you were younger, you would have been making videos?
Yeah.
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 So when it hit, you were like, oh, thank God I can make videos without needing to go to the Hollywood mechanism or.
Well, no, because if you remember when like YouTube launched, early days, it was just like a place for putting,
yeah,
like basketball. For me, the first several years of YouTube was where I'd watch like Michael Jordan highlight clips over and over and over all day, every day. It was just this garbage dump for years where you could just put and post anything. It was like, you know, it's just a miscellaneous bin of video clips until like, remember Lonely Girl 15?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yes. That was like a really interesting series.
It was fascinating, but it was the first thing that was put on the internet to just be on the internet.
Yeah.
So, no, I wasn't relieved because by the time YouTube came up, like that was when I was making my HBO show. And like in that era, 15 years ago, it was like only about sort of the mainstream, like success meant being on TV or being in movies, nothing else.
Right.
Like to say you made YouTube videos didn't even make sense then. I do remember vividly though, like around 2010-ish, recognizing that, like, I've got a very specific formula for a viral film that I promise will go viral every time I make it. And I made it like 10 different times. It was just like, capture the zeitgeist. Like, what are people talking about right now? Make a movie about this under 4 minutes long, make it punchy and put good music under it. And like, it's all you had to do to go viral. Because no one had ever seen anything like that. Yeah. Nobody was doing that. Now every video made does that.
Yes, yes. But no one was doing that. That genre of like,
I don't know that I invented it, but I think that I was part of a small group that recognized it really early. Like iPod's Dirty Secret was like, that was 3 years or 4 years before YouTube even came out. Like, we had to put that on a splash page. We had to pay for the bandwidth for that video.
Whoa.
And that did 5 million views, like, before there was YouTube. Like, we paid for each one of those, the bandwidth for each one of those views. But that just shows that, like, there's this appetite for a kind of video that only gets disseminated online, that people just want to watch online. So I think that, like, there was a natural, organic, you know, merger for the kind of videos that I like to make and then distributing it online. But I would say that it took me a while to figure that out.
Did you want to be a filmmaker when you were younger?
That's all,
like,
I
that was your childhood
That's
dream?
All I wanted to be.
Do you still want to make, like, film, like,
no.
A whole movie?
No.
No?
No.
Why not?
I mean, have you ever been on a big movie set?
Yes, I have. No, but it's a circus.
It's, I mean, I admire it, and I love the process, and I love being on sets, but I don't know that I'm good at expressing my own creativity unless I have, like, absolute control and hegemony, like, not just control, but like, mm-hmm. every aspect of it has to be under my thumb. Otherwise, I'm just not good at it.
Right. You know, what films did you like when you were younger?
I mean, I liked when I was really young. Like, I think my desire to be a filmmaker came mostly from like John Hughes 1980s, like,
oh yeah,
teen movies, which were like, look, when like The Breakfast Club and Pretty in Pink, when those came out, like, I was a baby or wasn't born yet or whatever. But like, when I saw those as like a teenager, like, a movie can make you feel this way. Mm-hmm. Like, oh shit, I want to make that movie. Mm-hmm. And plus, my mom, God bless her, a faulted woman, but like, she was so good about videotaping us and letting us fuck with the video camera.
Yeah, same with my dad. Yeah.
That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And it really like gets your juices flowing. It's like, this is a cool tool that I can do interesting things with. Franny, my 5-year-old, who's just here, like, she can read. She can't write yet, but she can read. She can fully read now, which is amazing. But she's just learning to read. She can't write. She's 5. She starts kindergarten this fall. She can navigate a phone, and not just navigate it, but like, she can
change the settings, turn it into dark mode.
I mean, how about like, you can have a full text exchange with her while she will go back and forth from.
She can text.
Yep.
But she can't write like handwriting.
She texts with emojis. She finds the emojis that conveys what she wants to convey, and she texts with that. And if she can't find the emojis, she switches the keyboard over to a GIF keyboard and will find the GIF that can do it, because she can type out the words that
she... So
she's
like, search hungry GIF and then sends it over to you?
Stuff
and
like that.
You're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Like, fully. It's usually not hungry. It's more like Jojo Siwa and like shit like that. But like she can do that. And then my 1-year-old, like, she can say phone, and like, you can give her Candace's phone. They're not allowed to touch mine. And she can unlock it and like... scroll through until she finds the app that she likes and press on it. Like, these things that we all had to learn,
yeah,
as adults or teenagers or whatever, it's like embedded in them literally before they can speak. So you try to imagine like what these kids are going to be like in 20 years.
Oh yeah. They just go up. Kids like will just go up to TV screens now and think it's a touch screen.
And
just
start swiping.
Swiping around.
Yeah, that's what the babies do when they look at a laptop.
Wow.
Or like what she tries to do with the TV. But it's just like, what are the social implications of that?
Who is the most famous person in your phone?
God, I have no idea. I couldn't tell you. I mean, I don't know. How do you quantify fame? Who's the most famous person that...
Powerful, I guess.
Just, I mean, it's the way that you would define it.
The most famous person that calls me relentlessly is David Blaine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
He calls you?
All the time.
What's For what?
Twice today.
What?
I want to show you a new trick. I'm working on this one. Just
so he's a friend. He's a dear friend. He's a wonderful human being. I absolutely love the guy. I'm also enamored by his craft.
Yeah.
Like what he does, not just his magic, but his endurance stuff blows my mind. And he's a friend. Like, I knew him in New York. We like play basketball together. He's a wonderful, wonderful person that I feel like privileged to know. And right now he's, I don't know if you saw, he put out a great YouTube video a week ago. That's sort of like his bio video. It's really good. Woody Harrelson narrated it. It's a YouTube video. It's really good. So he's just working on videos right now. And when you're as smart and as talented as he is, but you've never really done this before. You lean on your friends who know this. So he knows how well I know YouTube. So right now, as he's trying to figure out how to sort of like make the best content around what he does for YouTube, he calls me a lot for advice. Like this morning he called me so he could FaceTime me his new video. I'm like driving down the street trying to watch FaceTime, watch his video, and then give him feedback, which by the way, it's really good. Ooh. It's really, really good. I think he has the potential of just being like the most amazing magic YouTuber, because I think the only thing more interesting than his magic tricks are like him in real life. He's like a fascinating person.
Have you asked him who's going to win the election?
That's a scary question to ask somebody like him, because you know he can see the future.
Called it out as Donald Trump, like in the very beginning.
Did he?
Before it all. Oh yeah, 2016, I was at a party, and this is when everyone was like, "No, Donald Trump, are you kidding me?" Like he had just started running, and he looked me dead in the eye. He's like, "Donald Trump will be the president." I was like, "Okay."
I don't know. I've never asked him. That's a good question, though.
Do it, because whatever he says, I.
Yeah, I felt that way about Donald Trump as well.
Yeah,
in a really big way in 2016, like. I was doing everything I could to keep him from getting elected. I'm not a fan. But anybody who would like challenge me, like would laugh at the fact that I was taking it seriously. Like I'd offer to bet them. Like I'll bet any amount, any odds that he wins. He's going to win. And then the day of the election, we at my tech company at the time, I was still running it. We built this app that was called Exit Poll. And it was just a way for you to post a selfie video of who you voted for and why.
Okay.
And we made this very public, but it wasn't to quantify how many votes each person got. Like the TV news can do that better than we can. It was just to show you why people voted.
Okay.
So we stacked the deck. So it was Clinton, Trump, Clinton, Trump. Just so you could see them back, the juxtaposition back and forth. And it was a fascinating app. Only worked for one day. But everybody, I opened it that morning to make sure it was running. The app was working. And every Clinton voter was just like me. It's like, I voted for Clinton, and I do hope she wins, because she could. I do think she could. I think she's probably the, you know, I couldn't vote for Trump. Like that's what every. And then you would push the button, and it would play a Trump supporter who would give the most full throated, like personal endorsement of why they're voting for him. And when I saw that passion that he was able to elicit in his supporters, and then the lack of that passion that Hillary Clinton could, I was like, that's the most powerful thing right there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that still translates to 2020. I think that this year is a big, scary toss-up. Like, no one has any idea. I think Biden campaign today announced that they're saying now they're not going to do any campaign rallies up until the election. Like, that's crazy.
Whoa.
It's probably the right thing to do. Like, I don't understand campaigning or infectious diseases enough to give my official opinion on that. But it seems responsible.
Yeah.
But even so, like, how's this going to work?
Would you ever run for office?
No.
No?
Have you been asked?
Yeah, a lot.
Really?
I mean, like asked by my friends, like you're asking me right now. Yes. Like asked by like somebody who wanted to sponsor me. No.
Like the Democratic Party has never approached you and said, Mr. Neistat, we'd love to.
They do approach me a lot, but not for stuff like that. Like I think one of the things that was so frustrating for me about like, so I came out and made a video about how much I disliked Trump before the election. And I couldn't dislike him without stating that I was endorsing Hillary Clinton, which I was. But again, like I'm not a huge supporter of hers any more than I'm a big supporter of Joe Biden. I just think it's our only other option right now.
Yeah.
But I put that video out, and then like some one of Alex Jones's henchmen like put a video out, literally one of his henchmen. It was like an InfoWars video out about how I supported Hillary because she was paying me to do so. And it was like frustrating because it's such a stupid thing. And it's also frustrating because I was approached by her campaign to make campaign videos for her, which I would have been compensated for. So I literally said no to taking money and instead got so much shit because there was like these rumors that I took money, which is so perplexing to me. Like how whenever there's no common sense involved, yet people are buying it hand over fist, it blows my mind. And that was one of those situations.
Is that the Kids Bop version of Party Like a Rockstar?
We only do Kids Bop in this house.
Only do Kids Bop?
We are heavy Kids Bop fans. Kids Bop, it takes a very close second seat to JoJo Siwa, but only to JoJo Siwa. Besides JoJo, Kids Bop is our number one here in the
Neistat
household. I
actually really do like JoJo Siwa.
I'm a huge JoJo Siwa fan.
What's your favorite song?
probably Kid in a Candy Store. Probably.
Kid in a Candy Store.
Yeah, High Top Shoes is
a bop.
That shit's fire.
Make me do what I do.
High Top Shoes.
I understand why Casey is familiar with JoJo Siwa, but no, I mean, Matt, why do you know the words?
I mean, Matt and I go to all her shows.
Because JoJo Siwa fascinates me, and I wanted to know what all the hype was about. So I dove into it one day and listened to the music. And
Do you know the history? Do you know the story?
She's from Dance Moms, right?
Yeah, so like I know this because Franny watches it, but like we watch the old Dance Mom episodes and she's this baby. And I say baby, she's younger than Franny when Franny just came up here. She's a baby. She's all done up.
Mm-hmm.
She was never the best dancer in the dance group. She was never the best singer in the group. And she got shit on by the like mean moms.
Abby Lee.
Yes. Yes, Matt. And she was tough and she wouldn't take their shit and she fought back. And like she didn't run away and cry. She fought. And here's this little girl who's not the best dancer, who's not the best singer. She's not a supermodel. But she's like, where are all those other girls on Dance Moms? Those ones who were better than her. Have you ever heard their names? I know my daughter's not watching 800 of their videos a day.
Maddie Ziegler's incredible, though.
Was she one of the...
Yeah, Maddie Ziegler was the best one. And she went off, and now she's in every Sia music video.
My story was so much better. No, she's a G. But JoJo, what my point is that like JoJo took that, which was not a success, and like built this career. And like I read somewhere that she sold $40 million worth of her bows at Target or something like that. Even if that's 10% true, that's insane.
It's like Dr. Dre level.
It's Dr. Dre level, and she's 17 years old. And on top of that, there's been like a couple times where she's gotten shit. Like she got in a fight with Bieber once. I think he made fun of her. And she was like 15. She clapped back.
She's incredibly smart and is willing to make fun at herself.
That's
too.
Right. Self-effacing like, in all the right ways.
I feel like 2 years ago, she was kind of getting bashed on Instagram. And now TikTok loves her because she's able to laugh at herself.
Yeah, she's self-aware. And when you're like a parent of a daughter who's like trying to figure out what's okay to consume and what's not, like she doesn't swear. She's not a bad kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that most videos are kind of junk food. Like, they're not making my daughter any smarter. But compared to a lot of the kids' content out there, there's like, I don't worry when Francine's watching JoJo. JoJo is the only TikTok account that Franny's allowed to flip through.
Just JoJo?
Just JoJo.
Oh, that's cute. Have you ever been in a fight, Casey?
Fist fight?
Yeah. Have you ever
seen my
punched
hands?
Or been punched?
Look at these hands.
Ooh.
Those are teeth. Teeth marks. Teeth
from
stains.
Who?
I mean, when I was younger, I was a big, big fighter.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I was just, I think it's because, like, what am I? I'm 39 years old. I grew up in, like, the 80s and 90s when it was, like, angry kids. And you just, where I was from, you just fight.
Wow.
Yeah, you fight a lot.
Were you fighting out of, like, defense or were you picking fights?
Both.
Both.
Yeah.
It's just, like, a thing to do in the Northeast. Like, you just go and pick
a fight.
If there's beef,
you fight.
It's like Goodwill Hunting. They just, like, go to the.
Yeah. I mean, no joke. Like, that's what it was.
Or West Side Story.
When you're a saint all the way from. It was less West Side Story and more like Goodwill Hunting. But we weren't big. Like, they were adults there. Like, a lot of the fights that I got in were, like, you know, like freshman high school kind of stuff. Like, fighting in the back parking lot. I did get in a lot of fights when I grew up, like, before I left Connecticut. But once I got to New York, I think I got in two fights in New York. And I hope I never get in a fight again for the rest of my life.
Yeah. I hope so, too. I've never been in a fight. Mike, have you?
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah.
What, in the city?
Not in the city. I remember the first time I got punched in the face. I was, like, 11 years old, and we were skateboarding at, like, the local, like, school. There was, like, a four-set gap, and it was me, Sam Derone, and Johnny. And I was, like, 11, so Johnny was, like, 5. And there was, like, this group of, like, what couldn't have been more than 13, 14-year-olds, but I thought they were the older kids. We tried to hang out with them. They've tried to skate with them, but it's like me and my toddler brothers couldn't skate. And they were just like, get out of here, get out of here. And I was like, all right, guys, we're not going to be able to skate with them. Let's just like start to head back. And one of the kids just like started to pick on Derone. And Derone's the tallest one now, but he was really small back then. And one of the kids just started like rubbing his butt on Derone and like pushing Derone around. And, you know, I'm like, okay, I don't know what to do here. There's 5 of them. There's one like me and my younger brothers. And so I was like, Derone, let's just go. And Derone was like really upset. And I just grabbed Derone. And then I told him to like go walk away. And I waited until this kid, the one that was bullying Derone, tried to gap the 5 set. And in the middle of his gap, I just went, ah, and I scared him. So he fell because that was the only way I could like hurt him. And he just ate shit. got up, looked, didn't even, he literally got up, walked directly toward me and just wailed me right in the face. And all my three brothers were like, oh my God, we have to go. We have to go. And they were like, and I just took it, didn't say a word. And I looked at him and I must have given him the death stare or something, because I didn't move. I stood there, took the hit, looked him in the eyes. He knew this wasn't going to go anywhere any further. And I just walked home. And my mom was like, yeah, you know, it's part of what happens. And then ever since then, I vowed to never get hit in the face again. So I've been like swung at, but I like, we used to do Taekwondo. So like,
Bob and
I think that might have been when we started taking Taekwondo lessons, actually. So like, that was the only time I've been punched in the face. And I think it's a good thing to get punched in the face. It like really helps you define who you are very quickly.
I got the majority of my fighting up when I was a little kid, but like, getting into a fight as an adult too changes. Like, it's a really different monster. Like, I think I was in two really serious fist fights in New York City. Like, unavoidable.
Like, as not like a child. Like, not like a playground
adult
fight.
Yeah, yeah. Like, mid to late 20s.
Like, get arrested for type of fight.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Oh my God. Cops came, and that's how the fight ended. The one that I'm thinking of, which is like at a bar, like really mean guys, like causing trouble, like making fun of the girls that I was with, and my friend who I was with, who's like, he's like a friend of mine who's literally had a heart replacement, like a heart transfer surgery.
Yeah.
And so he, like, needless to say, he can't fight, and the girls can't fight, and these guys like waited for us outside, and it got really nasty, and like, there was like grown men fist fighting in the street, and that's the last fight I've been in. That was probably, I don't know, like 2005 or 2006 or something. Yeah,
that's pretty recent.
Yeah, like in my 20s, like I was an adult, and like I've been in situations like that since then, where like it was de-escalated and like physicality didn't have to happen. But I'll tell you what, like I tried this with my son, it did not work. But like when you're in a situation sometimes where like you have to protect yourself physically. Mm-hmm. You either know what to do or you don't. And if you don't, you have no idea what to do in those situations. You are helpless. You are helpless. And there's like a little bit of like the Casey, the like I'm Jewish, that like I'm so scared of like the Nazis coming back and like grabbing us and like stuffing us in a train. I'm looking at you as I'm talking.
I know. I'm locked in.
Like, I've just watched Schindler's List one too many times. Like, what would I do in that situation? And the answer is always, like, fight back.
That's what we think. We want to think
that. Of course. But, like, you get that in your head, and it's like, what would I actually do? And I just remember, like, learning how to punch and learning how to fight. And, like, I've trained for fighting now for, probably like, a dozen years. And my goal is to, like, never have to use any of those skills that I've acquired for the rest of my life. But when the shit goes down, like, I know what to do. Like, I know what to do in a situation when it gets physical. I know how to throw a punch. I know how to avoid a punch. I know how to eat a punch. Like, you know, you box for long enough, you fight for long enough, you know exactly what to do. And I feel like that's a really valuable resource. Like, I've always told Candace I wish she'd learn what to do in a situation where she had to get physical.
Like Krav Maga?
I did Krav Maga for, like, 6 years, maybe eight years.
Is that the
self-defense
guy?
Yeah, it's the Israeli military's version of hand-to-hand combat.
I've seen videos of...
It's insane.
That's what it is.
It's like...
Yeah, I can answer any questions you might have about it.
What?
I'm just saying, I can answer any questions you might have about it.
I saw a video about defending yourself from somebody with
a knife. Yeah.
Or if somebody was like holding someone like hostage with a knife, how to get the knife out of their hands. Because you don't want to just pull on their arm, because that will cause them to cut the person.
Yeah, man. Weapon defense.
It was like more of like a, I don't know, you pull their arm or you hit their arm.
Oh, yeah.
It
it's like it takes place on a bus, right?
Yes.
I saw this video. Yeah. Krav Maga's great.
The reason why I liked it was because I did Shorin Ryu before that and a number of like Eastern martial arts. Krav Maga is martial arts without any romance. Like one of the first thing you learn your first day in, like people would show up before they got their white belts, and we teach them groin strikes, like how to kick people in the balls. Like that's what you do. It's the first thing you do.
It's a very practical form
it's
of martial arts.
It's only practical, yeah. Like the thesis behind it is that, like, what do you do if you're trapped behind enemy lines and you don't have a weapon? So it's literally like head stomping is one of the things they teach you.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's really nasty.
You should, for your YouTube stuff, we should do a Krav Maga class. That would be so funny.
I actually feel like I do need it. And doing a YouTube video about it would be the only thing that would
make you get into a Krav Maga
to put myself in that type of situation. Because, like, Fight or flight, I'm flying. I'm out.
By the way,
see you later.
Flight is always the right thing to do.
Yeah.
You run, man. Yeah. Avoid fights. Avoid any physical interaction at all. You just don't know.
Like, and I restrain like a friend, though, too. Like, yeah. Usually I'm pulling a friend back from getting into something. I got in a fight one time, actually, in Dallas on the DART train because my friend was mouthing off to
this
older cop.
What's the DART train?
It's the Dallas Rapid Transit. Dallas Area Rapid Transit.
That's
DART.
Their acronym? Oh, yeah. DART.
DART. DART. Okay. What did I sound like?
Dark.
I say DART. Dark. No, it's DART.
You should
DART
see what's going through my head when I'm picturing the DART
a DART
train.
I got on a fight in a DART train. The lights went off and it was just a
so
whole
dramatic
scramble. But yeah, my buddy was mouthing off to this older couple and they were like, oh yeah, you just got your parents. They're like, I don't care what your parents do. What do you do? And he goes, what'd you say about my parents? And I was pulling him back. And then my friend put me in a chokehold and I couldn't get him off of me.
Yeah, it's
and
scary.
Then I bit him in the cheek because it was only because I was like right by his face.
You know,
I was trying to bang up his sides to get him off me, and I just bit him in the cheek.
You should have kissed him. I bet it would have stopped
yeah,
him in the
kissing,
same way.
And I also heard like just taking off all of your clothes makes anybody run
yeah.
away from you.
Like a gentle
going...
kiss on the neck. That's a great way to de-escalate.
Do you still train like
for fighting,
Krav Maga,
really,
or like
no.
do any?
I mean, still train, but no, not for anything, not any fighting disciplines. I mean, I want to get back into boxing. There's a good gym near here, but like COVID,
yeah,
any
yeah.
of that physical stuff scares the shit out of me. You know, they opened the Gold's Gym at the end of the street. They only let certain, they're allowed in there at certain times. There's just a certain amount of people they let in. But even so, can you think of a more like,
oh yeah, that has to just be
shared
a breathing
surface
ground
environment than a gym.
Ugh.
Yeah, I won't go.
No, I only work out at Scott's place, and that has been the best thing since Corona. It's just having a place to go.
You're like the fourth person who said that exact thing to me.
At Scott's gym?
Yeah.
Yeah, join Scott's gym.
Not at Scott's gym. Ilya said that to me.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's there.
And they have a sauna now. They built an outdoor sauna. It's so nice.
How did Scott get so jacked?
He
looks
like
a pro bodybuilder.
He was a wrestler when he was in high school, so he already has that foundation of a perfect body because he's been working on it since he was a kid. I've slowly been trying to get
And Matt just got a rowing machine in his house.
I did.
That's
I have
a
water rower.
That's
like
a great device.
House of Cards.
What?
That's exactly what I was picturing when you said that.
That's yes, the one that he got.
It has that like water
yeah,
tank.
I know the one.
Swoosh,
it makes
swoosh.
That nice sound when you do it.
That's a great exercise, by the way.
Yeah. I prefer it more than running. Running lately, though?
Are you not
I'm
doing
getting,
running anymore?
No, not as much as I was.
That's a bummer.
Running. I got LASIK, though, too. And I don't know. I just didn't want to like... Hit the
Make your eyeballs
too
bounce too much?
Yeah.
How long did you get LASIK?
About a week and a half
two weeks.
Best decision I've ever made. But I like the rowing machine a lot. It's I get to watch TV and do it at the same time. It's nice.
I heard Francine's feet coming up the stairs, and I heard Candace from a distance like, don't you go up there. And now Franny's standing downstairs outside of this building, screaming up into the window, I hear you up there. I think she gets
Do you read
jealous.
To your kids before they go to bed?
Yeah, well, yes, but now Franny reads, so we have these like learning books.
Oh.
Like 45 pages, and she reads them to us.
Like pictures for certain words?
No, it's words.
Oh, okay.
It's words, and she's really good at it, and it's we try to figure out what she's memorizing and what she's actually reading and then mix it up to try to make sure she's working and not uh-huh. just Rain Manning her way through the book.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's been quite the transition because we always read to the little ones, but yeah. like seeing her read back is like it's a weird thing to see.
What's your favorite kid's book to read?
We're really, really deeply into the Lama Lama series right now.
Ooh, is this new?
Yeah, it's like the Berenstain Bears of this generation.
The Lama Lama
Lama
series.
Lama.
It's a yeah. family of llamas.
Yeah, there's one that's like Llama Llama, Be Nice to Mama or something like that. They're really, it's a good book.
You could almost like read it to a rap beat probably and it would.
You could definitely read it. You could reverse engineer this like the dopest Kanye song ever written. But yeah.
Are you reading any books right now? You have a handful of books. Well, those are journals up there.
Well, I'm embarrassed to admit that I am, I'm reading John Bolton's book right now. Not a fan of him and the book's not great either.
Is this fiction or nonfiction? Who's John?
John Bolton was Trump's national security advisor who like he got fired in a kind of a scandalous way and then like was supposed to testify at the impeachment or could have testified at the impeachment hearing but didn't, but had all these secrets and instead he wrote this book and it's like the tell all book. And it's scathing. It's scathing. But he just seems like a bit of a sensationalist. And okay. Yeah.
He's like a big Republican establishment
huge.
Figure.
He's a huge hawk. Like yeah. he wants war. He's a big war hawk.
You've probably seen his photo. He's got like the white mustache. He just looks like your classic politician.
Yeah, yeah. So this book, like a lot of fanfare. So the reason why I read it is it just keeps coming up in conversation. So it's like, I need to know. I just want to be able to participate in those conversations. So I'm reading that book. Not a fan of it. Don't recommend it. Don't give him your money. Just figure out how you can steal it online. But no, I'm also reading like my favorite book that I'm reading right now. It's called Storm of Steel. And it's Ernst Younger was this, he was just a foot soldier, like a enlisted soldier, a scripted soldier in World War I. This book's 100 years old.
Whoa.
But he was a writer, and that was his craft. That was his gift. That was his art. But he was a frontline soldier, like a wildly brave soldier in World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And you were not allowed to keep a journal then, but he kept a journal, like which you could get shot for. If you kept a journal, they would shoot you.
Mm-hmm.
But he kept a journal. So basically, it's like this is a war 100 years ago, and instead of being written by historians, it's firsthand accounts by a guy who was there, written while he was there. So it's like stuff like that's really hard to sort of put yourself in. Like, I'm a big fan of ancient history, and like, I don't know that I've read a single piece of literature or watched a single movie or anything like that that makes me understand what it would actually be like to live in ancient Rome.
Mm-hmm.
But like Ernst Younger's writings makes it feel like what it would like to be you right now. Fighting in World War One.
Oh, I gotta read this.
It's dope. It's dope. Even this title, Storm of Steel, like it makes sense when you read the book. Like it's a hailstorm you're in, but it's steel instead of hail. Great book.
Ernst Younger.
Yeah, yeah. Very famous book.
You read a lot?
Yeah. Yeah. Almost only nonfiction though.
Yeah, I read a lot of fiction.
Do you read a lot of fiction? Fiction's fun.
Oh yeah, it's great. I've read like 3 books in the past few weeks.
I just find that like good writers do such, there's like so much interestingness in nonfiction, and if I can educate myself at the same time, not to say that you're not educating yourself when you're reading.
No, I agree. I wish I was more prone to reading nonfiction. I just love a good story.
Have you read Ready Player One?
Yes.
Okay, so like that was the last.
I went to the set for that like movie.
But you read the book.
Yes, I did. Like Ernest Cline.
Yeah, if we're talking about like nonfiction, junk food, like that is fucking, that book was so good. The movie was good. That book was amazing. Like I remember that's one of those books that, that like I would hide so I get an extra chapter in, and like I get so amped up. And one of those books that like when I finished the last page, I was like so upset.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like Googling books like that, and you're trying to read his next book, which was not that good. And like, it's just like, that's one of those, like the Harry Potter series or like, any Dan Brown books, as shitty and garbage as they are. Like the Da Vinci Code was fucking great.
Oh yes.
Like 2-page chapters.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, really brilliant. But no, I prefer nonfiction.
Yeah.
I got really into for a long time, spy novels.
Okay.
And, but nonfiction.
Yeah.
Like, there's one book, it's like, I don't know what it's called. It's like The Complete History of the CIA, which is like 800 pages. Like, it's like reading a textbook.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the most, like, it shows you what the CIA is. Like, when we picture the CIA right now, you think of all these geniuses that, like, know that. And you realize it's just a bunch of dudes like us trying to figure things out.
Yeah.
And, like, how much they fucked up. And this book was so damaging when it came out, like, 10 or 12 years ago, that the CIA released an official rebuttal about why it's inaccurate. Not untrue. They don't dispute a single thing that's said in there, I don't think. But mostly why it's like an unfair depiction. So you know what you're reading is true, but like the book doesn't dwell on the good things the CIA does. It just dwells on how much they fucked up.
When did this come out?
Early 2000s. Great book.
Oh, I gotta check
it out. Okay, so you start reading, this is like my, you start reading that book, and you understand these huge screw-ups that happened in the CIA and the like right post-World War II. Height of like the Cold War. And there's like, there was this one spy, this one British spy who was born in England, went to school at Oxford, enlisted in World War II, fought for the British in World War II as a intelligence guy. After that, joined MI5, was like a top spy for the British, was so good as a spy for the British that he went for the British intelligence service to be embedded with the U.S. intelligence service. So he had an office like at CIA headquarters, even though he was British. And his job was to work directly with the American intelligence service to make sure the British were learning everything that the Americans knew. The guy was a Russian spy. Yeah. Like his dad was this revolutionary who like around the turn of the century, like fought in Iran and Iraq on behalf. He was supposed to be there for the British government, but he realized how bad imperialism was. So he was like a secret, fought against the British, and he raised his son in like this vacuum where no one knew. So his son like identified. That guy's still alive, by the way. Yeah, he lives in Moscow right now. He's like 95 years old. Okay, but you read that. And like that was sort of like a few pages in this book about the history of this guy. So then you look that guy up and you got to read his whole story. And it's unbelievable. And then you learn at the end of his story, like just as his tenure is ending, just as he gets caught and has to get shipped to Moscow. At the end of his story, there's an American counterpart who was almost like the identical story. I think he was British though, not American. Russian guy, born and raised in Russia, worked for the Russians like World War II, Russian secret spy, like rose all the way through the ranks for working for like Russian spy agency, KGB, all that. And then like his defection to the like to Great Britain to like helping MI5 and being a British double agent the whole time. And like he was the only Russian, he was the only Russian double agent to ever be exfiltrated out of Moscow. So like he was in Moscow and they were going to kill him because they caught him. And instead there was this like plan to get him out that involved like walking down the street with a chocolate bar. And somebody notices the chocolate bar, and that means we have to activate the plan to get him out. And he has to like sleep in a trunk for 3 days. All this shit's
dude,
true.
You're selling me on this.
But this is why like I read these books.
Yeah.
Because like this is all true. And if you like think of the context of the world we live in, that like this is all really happening, it definitely changes your perspective in a way that like as much fun as Harry Potter is, like it doesn't I mean it. Like it doesn't get me there because like I know that like there's no train station behind, what is it? Come on, Harry Potter enthusiasts.
Platform 9.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But like this spy shit really did exist. And it's the same with like ancient history fascinates me. Like the Sumerians, they like invented writing and the written language and how that came to be. Like that's so fucking compelling and interesting for me. Anything having to do with like warfare all the way back fascinates me.
I've always wanted to dive into that and learn, relearn it.
There's that one book you recommended on your vlog, the World War II book.
The John Keegan's Second World War.
Yeah, I bought that book because of that video that you made.
Did you read it?
Yeah.
It's hard, right?
I had to take it out of my room, though, because it has Hitler on the cover, and it was like on the top of my stack of books.
You can get, there's a cover, there's like 50 covers of that book, but there's a cover that just has a graphic of the Congressional Medal of Honor. That's also a fine.
Okay, yeah.
And then there's one cover that has like a drawing of warfare.
I didn't realize that Hitler was on the cover, and it was just in my room for like months, and then I don't even know where it is anymore because I moved to California, but like, it's great.
I was going to give you names of those books. Like I'm looking up my...
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm going to actually have to re-listen to this.
Do you keep like a list of books you've read, books you want to read? Do you take notes when you're reading books?
I take a lot of notes when I read books. Yeah. But I also...
In the books or in a separate...
Typically in the books. I try to keep the books that I've read so I can reread them. Then I almost never reread them. But I do go back and look at the notes. Okay, so here's some good ones ever. Oh, Permanent Record by Edward Snowden I read
when it
came out last summer. That book will fuck you up. Like, you don't even want to know about that stuff. That was really good. Sapiens, which is like a pretty controversial. That was an Israeli.
Harari. Yeah.
Yeah, that was like a really hip book to read. But
yeah.
I really liked it.
It's in like every airport now.
Yeah,
it's like one of those.
I really enjoyed that book. Okay, the CIA book is called Legacy of Ashes. Great book. And then The Spy and the Traitor is about the British spy who was a double agent for the Russians. And then A Spy Among Friends is the book that was about the Russian spy who was actually a British double agent, if I said that right. I wonder if that's one of my children screaming right now.
Can you recognize their screams?
Yeah, that's her.
Yeah, that's Candace talking to the kid, right?
So we have a 1-year-old and a 5-year-old, both girls. Our neighbor has a 1-year-old and a 5-year-old, both girls.
Oh my God.
Wow.
So
you have no idea like how many mornings I'll come sprinting down the stairs at 6 a.m. being like, it's fine, I'm here. And like everyone's sound asleep.
Oh, no.
My neighbor's kids next door are screaming.
Are you friendly with the neighbors here? Are you like a community neighborhood
guy? Like we started this podcast out by talking about how rough a neighborhood this is, and it is, but like we have the greatest neighbors. Like my neighbors to the left are like my best friends. I go surfing with them all the time. They have a little baby who's 8 months old. Our neighbors to the right have a 1-year-old and a 5-year-old. They're lovely. Neighbors over there just had a baby like 3 weeks ago. It's like such good people.
One of your neighbors introduced himself to us when we were walking
up.
Oh,
yeah.
Because he thought we were moving to the neighborhood. He's just like, I just moved in. Do you guys live here? Like, no. I should have brought him over.
There's really nice people here. Yeah. And that's part of the reason why it's going to be hard to leave here.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there are good
people. Are you planning to leave?
I mean, eventually.
Back to New York or?
No. But like in Los Angeles. It's if either in Venice, it has to either get better or we have to move. It's untenable here. Like, Candace and I have the conversation every day. Like, is it irresponsible for us to have kids in this neighborhood?
Whoa.
Dude, I mean, what Franny interrupted when I was telling you is like, there's a double homicide, two people dead, a block and a half from here last Tuesday night.
Yeah.
That's a lot to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
At our Whole Foods. And like, one of the guys crawled into CVS after he was shot, like, trying to get help. That's like right there.
Did you know Venice was like this?
Yeah, I did. I even told one of my friends who was thinking about moving out here.
I
was
had
like,
no
Venice
idea.
Is great. It's gritty and a little dicey.
It sounds like living in like Bed-Stuy in like the 80s.
In
like,
the 80s, yeah. That's what it feels like. And I don't want to over like.
Yeah.
It's also like filled up with like hipsters with like.
Yeah.
Girls have hats on. The guys have like white tank tops tucked into their like blue jeans. Like it's that.
You have the Abbott Kinney side of
it. Yes. Yeah. And like, and look like. Great restaurants, like the coolest stores, like the beach is amazing. Like there are some of the best restaurants that we've experienced on the West Side are all right here, like within walking distance of our house. Best coffee shops. Like it's just cool here. Like there's a culture here that we haven't found anywhere else in Los Angeles, but there's a price for that culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that price is gunfire. And I just don't know how much of that we can take before it's like, it's not a safe thing for our kids.
I think you should become a superhero and at night become this vigilante and fight crime.
You already
crime
know how to
Venice.
Fight crime physically, so.
No, I don't ever want to fight crime.
I think it's your only option
we just
at this
hide.
Point.
We just hide.
Give up surfing and become the
no,
Batman.
No,
of,
I'm not interested yeah. in it. Surfing
the Venice, Venice vigilante. Yeah.
The Venice vigilante.
That's a good title for this podcast. So I broke my car this morning. It's at the car shop, but I didn't give them the key. So they're calling me being like, do you have the key?
Gotcha.
I'll do it on speakerphone. Just in case this is a usable item. Hey, it's Casey.
Casey, where's my keys?
I'll be.
Shut the doors to go home.
Fuck, I'll be right there. I'm going to jump on my bike now. I'll be there in probably 10 minutes. Is that okay?
Don't jump on a bike. You hurt yourself. Just get on it and get here as quick as possible.
All right. Thank you. I'll see you in a second.
What a character.
That's my auto mechanic. See, that's Venice guys. Like that guy, that's my auto mechanic. So block me is a G.
I thought you were pranking us at first.
No,
like,
look.
You just like
look
said,
at,
like,
look
hey,
at my,
call.
Look at my phone.
That's great.
You say you're a mechanic.
That I love. I love that. Like, and that's what Venice is. It's so great. It's so great. Like, it's so great that you're frustrated with the crime because they're like, how dare you spoil this amazing neighborhood? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like homeless people. If you don't have a place to live, like, let's help you. There's amazing shelters and resources here, but just please, like, stop shitting in the street. Like, I'm trying to push my kid in a stroller.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's such a special place. It's like, don't poison this special place. But apparently, like, that is futile because it's been like this forever, and I don't know that we can be the arbiters of change, even as much as I'd like to.
But yes, thank you.
Yeah, thank you
for
so
having
much
us here in your home.
Me, guys.
So and, much fun.
And yeah, if you guys love this conversation with Casey, feel free to check them out anywhere and everywhere. Do you want to plug anything?
Buy my new book. It's about world history, conflicts, and I'm just kidding. I don't
All right. Well,
all right.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Casey.
Yeah, thanks for having me.